We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful New York City, my man Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Ty, I'm great. And the reason I'm great is because I want to peel back the privacy carrot right now.
The privacy carrot.
I've been peeling a lot of vegetables.
Okay.
Before we started recording, you said, and you just wanted to emphasize, Tommy's ride or die.
That's right.
And I just said, you
Absolutely.
Know, I'm a Johnny guy. Mm-hmm. And I know St. Thomas is getting kicked out of their conference because they keep winning too much, but I'm just going to keep the faith and roll with the Johnnies. So to that, I say, sucka! That kind of weekend at Alliance Field.
Yeah. Well, it's going
to
be...
Are you not prepared to talk Tommy Johnny to start?
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
It's the D3 rivalry in Minnesota. We had Verballers tell us about it. I think I had heard of it before, but I'm not going to claim to know anything about it. It's the big rivalry outside of Minneapolis. They played at an MLS stadium yesterday in front of like 19K, Ty.
Wow.
It's pretty significant for a D3.
See, I'm very disappointed that you didn't first go to either Reggie Bush's bright yellow suit or Colgate's thrilling 21-20 road win over the Cornell Big Red.
Or the Sooner Schooner,
which is a little scary. No, I don't want to make too much light of that because it actually was quite scary.
Well, okay, we're going to get into reverbs momentarily. But if we're going to bring it up, obviously... Tommy Johnny, ride or die, is the leadoff. But is it okay to laugh knowing that everybody's okay?
I think so.
I think it is.
I think it is.
It's okay.
Especially on this show where we've talked at great length about live mascots.
And the failures that happen sometimes.
Live mascots and their failures that are kind of always a risk whenever you bring a live animal on the field.
Yeah. No, it's totally appropriate. If everybody's okay, you can laugh. Johnny's ride or die. For me,
let's get into our week 8 reverbs before we get into all the recaps. Again, people called in at 408-VERBAL-1, 408-837-2251. Our boy Ryan mixed them all up, boiled them down into about a 3.5-4 minute clip. Have a listen.
This is Adam from Long Island. We finally found a crack in that LSU offense. Was that lame?
Hey, Dan and Ty. It's Chelsea and Rachel from State College. It's your longtime listener, Katie from Richmond.
This is Adam from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Hi there. This is James from Oregon.
This is Charles calling from Columbus.
Hey, guys. This is Steph in San Antonio. I just about vomited because Texas just almost lost to Kansas. Thank God we have Sam Ellinger and Dicker the kicker, or else we would be screwed.
Texas is back. Can't let Texas hang around like that, Kansas. You'll just get bit.
I've never had a heart attack before in my life, but that Texas game, oh my goodness. Well, here's the college football, boys.
Hey, this is Steve in Champaign. The Chief is back. The Drive for Six is back online. Go Illini.
Lovie Smith rises from the dead. That's enough for a 5-year extension, isn't it?
I really thought Jonathan Taylor tailback had his fumbleitis under control. He must be off his meds.
So after 3 wins, Purdue, Rutgers, and Northwestern on the schedule, is the Drive for Six still alive? ILL.
I can already hear Dan saying, Wisconsin, what are we doing? What's going on?
Did Illinois just hand Northwestern the baton for the punching bag of the Big Ten?
There was a sequence in the game where Justin Fields threw an out route to Austin Maxx 3 times in a row for a first down each time. It was sort of reminiscent of when you would play NCAA with your friend. You had that one glitchy play that would work. The only difference is Northwestern didn't throw the controller across the room. Good on you, Northwestern.
Let me just say, it was so worth it to watch my Fighting Texas Aggies play 3 quarters of mediocre football just to watch Rich Rod almost punch through a plate glass window.
I just got my tonsil taken out on Thursday, and I'm pretty sure that it's not as painful as watching this Miami Hurricanes football team try to kick a field goal. Go Yellow Jackets.
Hail the Pit. The Coastal Division is dumpster fire, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Just got done watching my Hokies beat the Tar Heels in Lane Stadium in the 6th overtime using 3 different QBs. Maybe the Hokies aren't donezo after all.
H-O-K-I-E-S Hokies. Let's go.
It's Saturday morning now, and I'm still trying to come around to the grips of what the hell I watched last night. Because Friday night ACC football, it really gets you drunk without drinking.
Reporting live from SHI Stadium in Piscataway, New Jersey, where Rutgers has scored a real-life touchdown against Big Ten competition. Go Knights.
I don't have a family yet, but I might just have to start one just so I can tell my kids about a 7-0 Minnesota.
I want to let you guys know the Baylor Bears are 7-0.
Oh, my Baylor Bears are for real. Sick 'em Bears.
My Oklahoma Sooners are 7-0 for the first time since 2004, and I was 14 years old then. Y'all got to give it up. Jalen Hurts, dude. Kennedy Brooks, dude. Alex Grinch, dude.
My Georgia Bulldogs just beat a 5th-string backup quarterback. Does that mean I no longer have to worry about losing to backup quarterbacks?
I've never seen a team try to crockpot its opponent and its own starting quarterback, but hey, you do you, Georgia.
If Joe Burrow threw a 60-yard bomb with his pants down, they would have had to give him the Heisman right there, right?
Dude alert for Zach Moss, who is now the Utah Utes' all-time leading rusher. Go Utes.
The Oregon Ducks just beat the Washington Huskies by stopping a 4th-and-short. The ghost of Bo Nix has been lifted from our program.
And oh boy, is Troy Dye my hero.
You know, Washington loves to say, bow down to Washington, but to them I say, sit, lay down, roll over, play dead.
All right, there you go, Dan. Thank you so much to everyone who gave us a ring. We, of course, do a very serious show, Dan.
Yeah.
Where you and I were very serious and meticulous about properly naming each and every college football Saturday, at least once we get into the month of October. Brocktober.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So no, you're okay. Is it Smocktober to honor whatever it is Matt Rhule wears?
It could be.
Yeah.
You honestly could find supporting evidence for subluxation Saturday.
Yeah.
For seasonal affect Saturday or salad bug Saturday if you really wanted.
It could also, in retrospect, be, and we're spending far too much time branding meaningless things, because that's what we do, Stave Off Saturday?
Stave Off, yeah. Yeah,
Steve Adazio, Clay Helton, Derek Mason, Lovie Smith, all staving off that hot seat.
We had an email or write in and say, why do you push so hard for the alliteration? If you get rid of the alliteration, it really opens up the playbook. So perhaps on our Thursday preview show for week 9, we can live that alliteration unfettered life.
See, I'm okay with the alliteration because it makes it more challenging. Like, you really have to dig
to find something
that fits. It's almost like network sitcoms have to, what is it, the master of his domain, right? You have to come up with ways to get around the challenge to be, unique and fun.
There's 85 cop shows. What can we do to be unique? I got you.
Right. So I'm okay with the alliteration.
So let's start where I guess everyone wants us to start, mm-hmm. based on the emails and the tweets and the calls. Illinois 24,
yeah.
Wisconsin 23. Now, I watched a good chunk of this game live.
Mm-hmm.
I then rewatched it again this morning.
Oh, poor you.
I'm still not entirely sure how this happened.
I can explain.
To be perfectly honest, I would love to hear your explanation, because Wisconsin had 420 yards, almost 41 minutes of possession. They controlled the majority of this football game, and it wasn't until Reggie Corbin ran for a long touchdown at the end of the third quarter to make it 20-14 that it started to feel like it was a little bit coming off the swivel for Wisconsin.
Yeah, I like both of those. It was Dre Brown and Reggie Corbin for Illinois. It was, to me, a matter of both Illinois winning enormous moments and taking advantage when they had them. And also, there was like the reverse Dos Equis guy for both Jack Cohn and Brandon Peters. Brandon Peters, very rarely good. But when he is, wow. Jack Cohn, usually pretty good. But when he isn't, wow. And I think that's sort of what helped to define the game. And also Illinois' kicker not losing consciousness for very long after hitting the game winner. But yeah, Illinois is, I think they're more talented than people, including us, realize because of the transfers that have come in. And Wisconsin, I don't know, a lot of people were saying it's your classic letdown look ahead with Michigan State and Ohio State and the Illinois sandwich in Champaign. But Wisconsin just didn't look good. They did not rise to the moment, even though they were good on third down. Just the mistakes that it seems so uncharacteristic of a team that we were
told it was two big mistakes.
Were a playoff contender.
It was two big mistakes, and it was late in the game. It was the fumble by Jonathan Taylor tailback midway through the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Illinois turned that into a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then it was the bad interception from Jack Cohn.
He also had a drop on a key third down, I believe.
He had the drop.
Yeah.
But there was also that bad interception from Jack Cohn where he tried to float one over the linebackers and it didn't work. Illinois drives, they get in position for James McCourt. He kicks the game-winning 39-yard field goal at the gun to win it.
Irish kicker.
That's right.
It was great. It was a really cool scene in Champaign. I liked the gray uniforms a lot for Illinois.
Oh, they were sharp.
I wanted a splash of orange somewhere.
I know.
But otherwise, it was very cool to see. And can I ask you a very brief big picture question about Wisconsin now?
Sure.
We kind of, but not really, joked about LSU being eliminated from playoff contention last year for being shut out by Alabama. Like, that's all the data we need. We've seen LSU against a playoff contender, and they scored 0 points. Wisconsin's eliminated based on this loss, no matter what happens the rest of the way, right?
I agree.
In the way that Ohio State was basically eliminated with how they lost to Purdue and Iowa.
Yeah.
Wisconsin loses to Illinois. That's that.
This is like pouring soda on the hood of your car. You can wash it off, but you can never really get it out.
Right. No, it's in there in the DNA.
Yeah. The drive for six, by the way.
Yeah.
Still alive.
Hell yeah.
We could talk more about that on the Twos Cruise. But this is a big, big win for the Illinois Illini. Good for them. Good for Lovie Smith and that national treasure of a beard that he has.
Mm-hmm.
Love that thing.
Love week eight leading with the Tommy Johnny game in Illinois. You can't script this.
30.5 point home dogs. All right.
Yeah, that was great.
Stay in the Big Ten. Penn State 28, Michigan 21. I want to give a lot of credit here to both teams and for different reasons, but let me start with Penn State.
Is this the Rasheed Wallace, both teams played hard? That's your moment?
Both teams did play hard.
Okay.
They did.
I agree. Continue.
Penn State, I guess, more so early. They jumped out to a 21-0 lead midway through the second quarter. And I thought they looked completely dominant. They were killing Michigan in the trenches. Sean Clifford connected on really pretty looking deep balls early and throughout the game. Had three touchdowns, ran for another. I thought looked really solid. I still have no idea what kind of voodoo James Franklin is trying with the running game. But aside from that, I thought they were going to run Michigan out of the stadium early. They just looked completely dominant with how fast they started. KJ Hamler is freaking good. Mm-hmm. Had incredible moments in this game. Penn State looked the part, at least early. Michigan, though, on the flip side, down three scores. Clearly, their issues so far this year have been well documented. On the road, wide out, it was a prime opportunity for them to just sort of pack it in.
Yeah.
And they didn't.
No.
They didn't quit. In fact, Shea Patterson had Ronnie Bell in the end zone for a touchdown. It would have tied it up at 28 late in the game, and he couldn't hang on to it, and that was the ball game.
And he's probably been their most dependable dude out wide.
He has. He has, and that's what was disappointing about it. He put it right on the numbers. He had it.
Yeah. No, I hate to see it. I don't say that in a sarcastic way. I do hate to see a drop in a guy.
Drops suck.
Totally crushed.
Unless it's your team. Unless it's your team and you're going against an opponent and the drop is helpful.
Sure.
As a third-party observer, I hate to see the drop. I also really like Zach Charbonnet. I know he's young. He's going to have much more time in that Michigan uniform, but he plays with a lot of heart. He runs hard. He's low to the ground. I think they're going to get a lot of mileage out of him. But 28-21, Dan, what say you here?
So, yeah, a lot of things. Unbelievable way for Penn State to jump out in this game, and then unbelievable in the opposite sort of way that they just sort of curl up offensively. And you mentioned the no real plan in the run game. Ricky Slade has a huge run, and then two carries for, 4 yards otherwise?
Yeah.
So they Noah Kane, I saw, got zero carries after back-to-back really strong games in the first half.
In the first half. Carries. No carries. Nope. They're so trying. I don't know if they're... Are they saving him for the Big Ten Championship? Like, what is the strategy here with Noah Kane? The only thing that I can think up is that James Franklin is trying as best he can to not have two of their running backs transfer.
I guess.
But I don't know if that's an effective way to build a running game.
Yeah.
And in this case, an effective complement to Sean Clifford, who is still relatively green in his own right.
The numbers don't back it up, but I thought Shea Patterson probably had the best game of his season. Made a lot of throws. We saw some affected by penalties. We saw receivers make plays. We saw some drops from Michigan. But the really big disappointment, I mean, there are disappointments on both sides in this game, but that KJ Hamler, and he's unbelievable. He's a dude, 100%. But that long touchdown, I think it was in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Was that him? Yeah. I think he was given about 25 yards cushion. Now, who am I as a non-defensive coordinator, non-DB coach, non-whatever to question? But he's small and fast, and maybe you shouldn't just let him get ahead of steam before trying to guard him. And so that was a rough watch. Sean Clifford looked really comfortable and at times uncomfortable at quarterback for Penn State. And Michigan-wise, back to their offense, you hate to see the drop. I really do. And there just at times seems to be no rhyme or reason, even with Shea Patterson having a good game. Not a lot of play action. They ran the ball all right with Zach Charbonnet. And they really didn't try to move around the Penn State linebackers. They really didn't try to suck them in. I would have liked to see a little bit more messing with the Penn State defense.
Well, you know, the thing is, and I'm glad you brought that up. It reminds me a lot of when you and I would play NCAA.
Sure.
And we would call plays that we were comfortable with, but not really as part of any larger strategy.
Correct.
Or scheme. It was just what we felt like in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there were definitely things out there where I agree, maybe mix it up a little bit. Maybe run a little play action. Maybe try to stretch those linebackers. And it just didn't...
Well, that was sort of what we were promised, right? It was RPO stuff. It was really stressing out teams sideline to sideline. And for as well as Penn State's defense played for chunks of this game, it didn't always seem like they were stressed.
No.
Like, oh my God, what is Michigan doing next? It was Michigan having, and specifically Shea Patterson, having to drop back, step in, scramble, and make plays. And it seemed like he was just, and this is something we've talked about, he was the more stressed of the two entities. And that shouldn't be the case.
All right. 28-21, big win for Penn State at home at night. All indications are that they are on a collision course with Ohio State. So we'll talk about that one in a couple weeks. Okay.
In Columbus.
Oregon, 35. Washington 31, your defending Red Box Bowl champions.
Where's my hat?
Get there the is. W here. A fun back and forth game. You'll remember that in our preview, I cited Oregon's defense as one of the main reasons for picking him here.
Yeah.
They had only given
more skeptical.
Yeah, they had only given up, four touchdowns entering this game in total?
I want to say 25 total points in the last five games combined.
Well, they gave up four touchdowns just to Washington in this game, Dan. I know you are the Oregon aficionado, the Pac-12 aficionado between the two of us, but
sure.
In my humble opinion, I thought both quarterbacks were impressive. I definitely felt more comfortable seeing the ball in Justin Herbert's hands because there's a little more data to kind of back up what he's going to do with it. He threw to 9 different receivers on the day. He had 4 touchdowns. Jacob Eason, for his part, looked pretty good. Looked like a pro caliber quarterback when he's got a clean pocket. A lot of offense here, maybe more than we expected, but a good back and forth game. Savon Ahmed, 140 on the ground, a touchdown. Like a lot of offense in this game in ways that I certainly did not expect.
Yeah, the story of this game, I mean, there were a bunch of different stories within the game. It was Oregon's patience. They go down 14 in the second half. They go for it on their own 34-yard line on 4th-and-1. I want to say, as Todd Blackledge is saying, Jimmy Lake, Washington defensive coordinator, told us that Oregon likes to run left on 3rd or 4th and short when they decide to run. And then Oregon ran left. And I said, oh my God, no. And then they ran left for 8 yards and it was okay. Oregon was patient. Oregon, you know, coming on late, they just kept going with the runs that were working for 7, 8, 9 yards. I thought Justin Herbert made plays when it counted late in the game because he was not making them for the first 2.5, 3 quarters. You said that you were a little bit more confident in Justin Herbert in this game. I was not. And he made plays, but he was skipping passes. He was missing open dudes. I thought Jacob Eason was the better quarterback in this game. I was more scared of Jacob Eason's top level ability than I was confident in Justin Herbert.
Really?
Maybe that's me as a always sort of skeptical and heartbroken Oregon fan. But what Jacob Eason was able to do in driving the ball downfield, to me, was scarier in the vacuum within this game. I came away crazy impressed with him.
Yeah, there was a stretch in this game where he was picking Oregon apart.
Yes.
And they couldn't do anything about it. He was 23 of 30 on the day. I forget his yardage and touchdown count. I guess he had 3. But, you know, like both quarterbacks, I thought, definitely showed why there is so much hype around him. Because there's a ton of arm talent on both sides of the ball. And when they've got time to throw and pick apart... In Eason's case, an Oregon defense that had some injuries, you see what he's capable of. It was impressive in that regard.
Yeah, it was sort of the story as well. I mean, this is week 8. Everybody's going to be beat up. But Oregon loses their best corner somewhere through the game. Troy Dye, he's been their dude in the middle of the defense for 4 years. He breaks his thumb, yells at the health and whatever, the conditioning staff, throw a cast on me. He goes back out and is awesome. Obviously, Oregon loses their best pass-catching option in Jacob Breland, their starting tight end, before this game last week. And then Washington, they're down, I think, 2 key running backs. They're down receivers. Chico McClatcher goes down in this game.
Yep.
They're down a lot on offense. It comes down to a fourth down play that was very physical. If you want to say it was a PI, I can't make a strong case against it. But Washington had chances. They lost moments. They had a 3rd and short that they gave up on a weird, what it was like a wildcat type call for Washington.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the most unexpected thing to me was Marcus Arroyo outflanked Jimmy Lake in the second half. Oregon, I think it's 21-3 Oregon after that quick second half touchdown from Washington. And the big stat, with as good as Washington's offense was against Oregon's defense, Oregon won the 4th quarter 7-0.
Right.
And that's enormous, and it's an enormous step forward for Oregon. So I came away very impressed with Oregon's resolve and with Jacob Eason.
Staying in the Pac-12, we'll go to Utah 21, ASU 3. We both liked the matchup a lot for the Utes here.
Didn't I lock it up? I believe I did.
I think you might have.
Yeah.
This was one of those games where it played out exactly the way we thought, and almost with like a carnival mirror version of it. It was exactly what we thought, and greatly exaggerated.
Yeah.
You couldn't miss it even if you tried. Utah's defense was just suffocating. ASU finished with 136 total yards. Jaden Daniels, 4 of 18 passing for just 25 yards and a pick. They were 2 of 13 on third downs. They had 12 penalties. The only bright spot for them was Eno Benjamin going over 100 on the day. Otherwise, beyond that, you know, Utah wasn't perfect on offense. They had 4 turnovers, and Tyler Huntley went down in the 3rd quarter with another injury.
Yeah.
But 21-3, it was a defensive, impressive showing for Utah, at least in that regard. Zach Moss, by the way, congratulations to him, sets a record for career rushing yardage at Utah.
Oh, good. Yeah, the Tyler Huntley injury is a pretty big bummer, especially with who they have coming up. I think they have Washington soon. He didn't look like himself when he came back in the game. So then they bring in, was it Drew Lisk and Jason Shelley, who spelled him last year.
Jason Shelley is still playing, huh?
Still playing.
Damn.
Completed a pass. No, really nice win. And it was essentially all on the defense. Utah has a corner, their best corner, Jalen Johnson, just completely smothered Brandon Ayuk, who really fun to go on and just smother Arizona State with love after last week and Jaden Daniels with love and have them just completely look like a high school team against Utah. And that's a credit to Utah.
Baylor 45, Oklahoma State 27. So for about three quarters of this game, I was not feeling great about picking Baylor. It was not feeling great. It wasn't so much that they couldn't get anything going. They just left a lot out there. Mm-hmm. And it was very unfulfilling to watch. It really wasn't until the last 10 minutes or so that the Bears finally started to take a little bit of control by virtue of a couple big plays. They went up 31-27 on a touchdown run by Charlie Brewer after a nice 7-play, 75-yard drive. Ensuing possession, Oklahoma State gets it back. They knock it out of Spencer Sanders' hand. Baylor runs it back 20 yards for a scoop and score. That makes it 38-27. And then the cherry on top, a 73-yard touchdown run by Jamichael Hasty, probably the best name in college football, if I'm being honest, which makes the score 45-27. I don't know if this qualifies as a backdoor cover, but it was certainly a heroic cover to hit the over of 68.5.
Nice.
Just an incredible series of events very late in the football game. Last 10 minutes is what did it for Baylor.
Yes. Chuck Brewer, unbelievable day. Jamichael Hasty with a great exclamation point on the game. Both, by the way, last name Hasty for running back, last name Gainwell for running back.
Not bad.
For Memphis.
That's not bad.
It's a good year. It's the positive spin on having Blewett as a kicker. It's the other side of the coin, and I can appreciate it. Really nice comeback for Baylor, a slow start. And Oklahoma State, they give the ball away so much.
Yeah, they do.
It makes it very hard to win. They're like a British bakery, Ty, just filled with turnovers. This is not a fun watch at all. And that's hard to do when you have Chuba Hubbard and Tylan Wallace on your team. And so really good for Baylor. They are squarely the second best team right now in the Big 12, setting up a huge matchup against Oklahoma. I didn't see this coming. Happy Smocktober to everybody.
Yeah, Chuba Hubbard is real good. Real good. Yeah. He got his in this game. If you haven't seen him play yet, go and watch the highlights. He plays like an NFL running back. He runs like an NFL running back, and he's still in college. He's going to play in the league someday. He's a fun watch. And I like Baylor. I think they're a good team. There's just an undercurrent of inconsistency that worries me there. But they are 7-0. It's West Virginia, TCU, the Oklahoma game that you mentioned, Texas and Kansas left on the schedule. So barring any kind of like brain fart against West Virginia or TCU or even Kansas now with the way they've been playing, it looks like 10-2 at the worst for Baylor.
It does look like 10-2. And they have both Oklahoma and Texas at home. I don't know if you mentioned that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, both of those teams in, I believe, consecutive weeks are coming to Waco. So it could be a kolache-filled nightmare, Ty. It could be for Oklahoma and Texas. But either way, it's just an incredible season for Matt Rhule. We'll see how long they can actually hang on to him in Waco. But really nice story for Baylor.
Smocktober. I love it.
Smocktober. And I did look it up, Ty. In Big 12 play, you look at like the number of turnovers lost. And I know that turnovers can be random with the way the ball bounces or is tipped or whatever. Teams have 3, 4, 5, some have 6. Oklahoma State has 12 turnovers lost in Big 12 play.
Really?
Not going to do it.
We should set them up with Michigan. That'd be a nice couple.
Yeah. They're both generous lovers. Right?
Vandy, 21.
Yeah.
Missouri, 14. I had to throw this one in there. We're going to go to the SEC next and run through Florida and South Carolina and Alabama, Tennessee, all those games. Under Derek Mason, Vandy has had a pretty good defense. Not this year. They came into this game 124th in the nation. And Mizzou had actually scored 31 points in 11 straight games.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I fully understand this one, Dan. We're just a week removed from singing the praises of Mizzou and talking about how Mizzou has a chance to make things very interesting in the SEC East because they were playing such good football. This is an ugly game for them. An ugly game, an ugly drive chart, a bunch of penalties, a lousy game for Kelly Bryant. Poor execution.
Yeah.
Poor execution on scoring opportunities. And if you were somebody out there, and I know there are plenty of folks who aren't too keen on Barry Odom, if you're one of those Mizzou fans, this game did not do any favors for Mr. Odom. This could have been the worst loss of his career so far in Columbia.
I'm talking Biddy Game Barry.
Biddy Game Barry?
I mean, the Wyoming
it's a little forced. Losses. It's a little forced, but not bad. I get where you're going.
There are very few synonyms for small or little that begin with a B, Ty. And I got to roll with alliteration if we're going to go Big Game Bob.
Right.
Biddy Game Barry. It was a really nice day for Vandy at home with such a horrendous start, down to, I believe, their third string quarterback, Mo Hassan, a Syracuse transfer to JC to walk on at Vandy, who, by the way, so I look up Mo Hassan, sounds like an amazing dude. Started a charity that helps to feed hungry people in Nashville with food waste.
Really?
It's called Second Spoon, Ty. Like, I was just so into everything happening for Vandy. So really good story for Vandy. It's good for everybody, except if you wear the other black and gold and right. had to watch Kelly Bryant and this Mizzou offense, as you mentioned, just look terrible with scoring chances. And this is just what the SEC East it is now. It's Kyle Trask and bad coordinators. I don't know. I mean, it's bad coordinators outside of Florida. I don't know what else we can say, but it's nice win for Vandy and Mizzou doing just wasting an unbelievable schedule.
What about Baffling Barry?
It's not bad, but I like the fact that he lost to Wyoming and Vandy. Is there something, is there a synonym with being away from home?
I don't know.
With a right. B?
Let's go.
We'll get back to it.
Into the SEC a little bit deeper. We had Florida 38, South Carolina 27. This game picked up in the second half. But
yeah.
In the first half, when I texted you, I'm serious about this, the most exciting thing in the first half was Greg McElroy trying to grow a beard. Did you see this?
Was that self-contained to the first half?
It may have been. In the first it felt that way watching the game.
Right. Yeah.
From what I could tell now.
Great attempt, no doubt about it.
From what I can tell, he's right at that super itchy stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Every guy out there knows what I mean.
Yeah.
You get to the super itchy stage, and if you're serious about the beard, you got to power through it. You really got to want it to get that beard. And so I wish Mr. McElroy well if that's where he's at right now, because it did appear so.
Yeah. I don't know what, it's just a more rough and tumble Greg McElroy. That's
little
the
bit.
Attempt.
Trying to go a little edgier.
Do you think Nick Saban can grow facial hair? I was just thinking about Greg McElroy in college. And the fact that we've never seen, like we saw an old Urban Meyer as a Notre Dame receivers coach with a mustache, right?
Right, right.
Have we ever seen Nick any sort of hint of stubble, anything from Nick Saban?
It's almost like he's had it lasered off or something.
I'm looking right now, and it looks like he could grow a mustache. I'm seeing some shadow there. But
okay.
McElroy's trying to do what Saban apparently has never done. Sorry about that tangent.
So Kyle Trask, three of his four touchdowns were in the fourth quarter. Those are the ones that catapulted Florida to victory here. What do you think of Kyle Trask's? We've made fun of the arm strength.
Yeah.
It's there. The calm throw Kyle. I've seen the tweets.
Yeah.
He's a gritty kid. He's obviously got some talent. You just kind of don't.
Coach's son, gym rat.
Yeah, like all that stuff applies. You just don't know when the talent's going to show up.
Right.
And that's sort of my problem with him at this point.
I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think, you know, if a game against a really good team is dependent on him rifling in timing routes, that Florida's going to be in a great position to win. But I don't think that's ever necessarily what a Dan Mullen quarterback has been depended on in any right. sort of consistent way. So I thought he was good. He came on strong late, obviously. It was an inconsistent start of the game for Florida. And I don't think it's not insignificant that Florida was able to, after the way they lost to LSU, staying on the road against the South Carolina team, high off of beating Georgia, to weather some kind of down and out play for the first two and a half, three quarters and come on strong late, especially on the ground. I thought they showed a good amount of resolve, Florida did. Weathering South Carolina, weathering a really strong game from Tavian Feaster. I was impressed with the Gators to get out of this with a win and to make the statement that they did. And South Carolina, Ryan Helinski is a backup quarterback for a reason right now because he's a freshman and he had those moments after that opening flea flicker. And I came away really impressed with the fight that Florida had.
Yeah, big game for Tavian Feaster. I'm glad you mentioned that. 175 and a touchdown on the ground. And credit to South Carolina's defense. They did a good job despite giving up 38 points. They tried to hold this thing together for as long as they could.
Yes.
Just needed more from the offense here. And
Tavian Feaster is the backup running back here. This is a Rico Dowdle backfield. Yeah.
I'm with you, though. I think a good showing for Florida to go on the road a week after that LSU game and get the win like this. It's good on them.
Yeah.
Alabama 35, Tennessee 13. This is a rivalry, a traditional rivalry here.
Smoke those cigars.
Tua hurt his ankle in the second quarter and gave way to Mac Jones, at which point the offense switched up in predictable ways. They started using Najee Harris a bit more.
Right.
Tennessee, I don't know if you saw, had a sweet goal line fumble on a QB sneak late in the game that went back for a Bama touchdown. I thought Jeremy Pruitt was going to kill Jared Garantano. What was your takeaway here?
It's hard to look at Tennessee scoring 13 points, and I don't think they scored a touchdown in the second half in a positive way. But I kind of liked, even with Brian Moore going down, I kind of liked Tim Jordan and Ty Chandler on the ground. I was impressed with how they were able to. And this is not unique to Tennessee. To run on Alabama is something that teams have done this year and will continue to do, with especially Alabama's youth and injuries up front. If Tua is out, if Tua is limited, I mean, he had the ankle injury last year and we saw the effects after he came back. I think it's a different ankle this year. Alabama's not going to win national championship without a fully healthy Tua, just because they're too vulnerable and the drop off is too great. We'll see how good Tua's little brother is if he gets pressed into action. They have LSU in a couple weeks, so we'll see. The takeaway is Alabama found a way to win comfortably in a game where they are terrified of what's going to happen with Tua's ankle.
Can we talk about Tua's nameplate on the back of his jersey?
Let's do it. I saw you tweeted something out. I'm ready.
They're going with a TU period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tagovailoa.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I'm disappointed it's not a full-on Tua. Like, instead of the period, just find a way to squeeze an A on there.
Uh-huh.
And I'm confused as to why the first name's relevant when you have a number. I understand he's got a little brother on the team.
Right, whose name also begins with a T.
Wouldn't the number be sufficient to determine which Tagovailoa is which?
Here's an even stupider question, Ty. Why can't we just have Tua's first name and no Tagovailoa?
Like Pele.
I believe if you, and you as a player, you have to agree to this, as a coach or whatever, as an organization, you have to agree to this. If you have come to be known by your first name and you've, say, made an all-conference team, and this goes for all sports, like Zion Williamson should just have Zion on the back of his jersey.
Or LeBron.
LeBron. Ichiro, Ichiro did do it, and that was great. Like Baker Mayfield should have just said Baker on the back there.
Yeah,
that would have been incredible. Reggie Bush should have just said Reggie. Tua should just say Tua, and you know maybe he wants to represent his family's name, and I get that. And then it's his decision. But I think you're right. He has earned the no first couple letters of his first name.
I just
name.
Don't understand why you can't go the extra A. Like,
let
this is Alabama.
Talia,
they could find
Talia
some
Talia can way. Do Tagovailoa. Tua should just be either Tua or just Tagovailoa. I agree. I'm sure it's some sort of syntax thing with the SEC.
It's very strange. Very strange
but
to me.
It should just be three letters back there. 100%.
The main takeaway for me here, outside of the fact that Jeremy Pruitt almost killed Jared Garantano, was Bama's receivers are ridiculous after the catch.
Just got to get it to him, though.
You got to get it to him, but they're ridiculous. And as I look at my sheet here, I'm going to go to Georgia, Kentucky next. And we know Kentucky's deal.
Do that.
I'm wondering, what it would look like if you tried to run the Lynn Bowden offense with someone like a Henry Ruggs or a Jerry Jeudy.
I'm sure one of those receivers was counted on under center or taking snaps in high school pretty consistently, because high school football is you just line up your best athlete there 100% of the time.
Georgia 21, Kentucky 0. As you know, the artist formerly known as Tropical Storm Nestor played a bit of a factor here. Nice little monsoon game, I thought.
Yes.
If you looked at the box score and didn't watch the game or read about the game or know the circumstances of the game, you're going to see that Jake Fromm was 9 of 12 passing for 35 yards. That's a bit under his average for a game, Dan.
Is it? Okay.
Kentucky tried the Lynn Bowdification of their offense. Mm-hmm. Didn't work as well this time. He was 2 of 15 passing for 17 yards.
It was not the first football game played in heavy rain, as per my knowledge, right?
Correct.
I get the Jake Fromm's numbers being affected. I get the offensive output being affected, and you could look at the final score, 21-0, and you can say, all right, well, you win your clunkers. Georgia offense was bad. DeAndre Swift was good. Georgia offense was bad. If you watched, and I don't know, I can't speak for you, I watched some of this game because anything more than some is dangerous to anybody's health. This game was a bad watch. And it was not just because of the rain. And to be clear, when you say it's a nice little monsoon game, the game wasn't nice. The monsoon situation was always fun as long as people are okay. Ty, this game was punt, 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 downs, punt, punt, end of half, punt, fumble, punt, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, downs, touchdown, downs, sweet merciful God, end of...
How many punts in a row was that?
To open up the game, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 punts before Georgia went for it on fourth down and failed.
Good hell.
And then 2 more punts before the end of the half.
Okay.
So 10 punts and a turnover on downs.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
LSU 36, Mississippi State 13. 4 more touchdown passes for Joe Burrow. School record, apparently 29 on the year is the LSU record, or was the school record. So congrats to him. We also had Auburn winning big over Arkansas and A&M winning 24-17 over Ole Miss. Got anything to say about any of those games, Dan?
Strong to very strong game for Bo Nix, especially in the second half for Auburn. Did a really nice job defensively against Arkansas, which, okay. And shout out to Joe Burrow's butt. We got to see Joe Burrow's butt.
Okay.
And that was a thing that happened in Starkville. Also, his pass, his touchdown pass, where he sort of rolled out to his left when he was flushed out, I believe, was it Derek Dillon? I think that was Derek Dillon for 30-some-odd yards, throwing away from his body to Derek Dillon in the end zone on the run. Was maybe it's not the Heisman moment, but it's a Heisman moment for Joe Burrow, who is terrific. And we'll also point out, Ty, remember 2 years ago we did a hot take show?
Yeah.
And one of our discussion points was, should Ohio State be starting Joe Burrow instead of JT Barrett? Maybe the answer now is, probably.
Probably, yeah.
So really, really cool to see Joe Burrow's journey and his success.
Let's go over to the Big 12. Texas, 50. Kansas, 48.
Huge upset.
What a wild game, man. Six touchdowns in the fourth quarter. As you'd guess with a score like this, huge numbers across the board for Sam Ehlinger, Keontae Ingram, Devin DuVernay, Carter Stanley, Puka Williams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Here is how we got to 50-48. Kansas scores a touchdown with a minute and 11 seconds left to tie the game, seemingly tie the game at 47-47. Mm-hmm. The Mad Hatter says, nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
And after a dropped open touchdown pass as well.
Right. We're playing Texas. We're on the road. We're going for two. They get the damn conversion. So now they're up.
Wide open.
Wide open. Wide open.
Yeah.
They're up 48-47 at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Ehlinger gets the ball back, does the Sam Ehlinger thing, drives 60 yards, 10 quick plays, sets up Cameron Dicker, the Texas kicker, game-winning 33-yarder at the gun. Okay. A lot to unpack here. It is Texas-Kansas. We won't spend too much time talking about this, but I think we can say at a minimum, despite all of the consternation before the year about what it meant to hire Les Miles at Kansas, and he's an older dude and he doesn't have staying power, he's not going to be there that long, whatever. Kansas looks more competitive and is definitely more interesting this season. Yes?
For sure.
That's a good thing for the program. On the Texas side,
the Big 12.
On the Texas side, giving up 48 to Kansas is not a good look. We know that they're injured in the secondary. We know that defense is an issue. This is not good. This is not good, especially at home for the Longhorns.
There's very little you could say about Texas that isn't at least a small issue right now.
Sure.
No, you're right about Kansas. I think Kansas is a story here. Good for Texas, I suppose, for surviving, especially when I don't think a lot of people saw this game. It was on the Longhorn Network. Les Miles fired his offensive coordinator last week. So for as fun as he has made this team at times, he also realized halfway through the year, I screwed up maybe my biggest decision upon being hired. So good for him for realizing that quickly, and good for Kansas because they have a lot of offensive firepower. It's just a matter of depth and keeping good coaches and, you know, showing fight throughout a year where they're probably going to go, 2-10, 3-9.
Okay. 50-48, wild game in Austin. Iowa State 34, Texas Tech 24. As we've been saying all along here, we do celebrate Brocktober on the solid verbal.
Yeah.
378 yards, 3 touchdowns, and an interception for our boy Brock Purdy. Iowa State never trailed Texas Tech. They led 34-17 late in the fourth quarter. Left some points on the board, Dan. Especially in the first half. So this could have been a bigger win for the Clones, but nonetheless, to get the W here is important.
Yeah, they're 5-2, they're 3-1 in conference. Breece Hall was a total dude, you know, puts this game away. It's really nice to see the balance Iowa State has, and obviously the end of the Baylor game is going to haunt them probably all year long, but Baylor is a full-on good team, as we now know. And I still think Iowa State, I think the game's in Norman, but they have a good shot to beat either Oklahoma or Texas, to me, at this point still.
Oklahoma 52, West Virginia 14. We already mentioned about the Schooner rolling over, and that was sort of the highlight here. Otherwise, a big game for Jalen Hurts, goes something like 16-17.
Mm-hmm.
Another statistical showing for him on his way, presumably, to being that Heisman front runner.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Oh, K-State. K-State knocks off TCU. 24-17.
A former lover of yours.
I have a hard time saying their name. Any quick thoughts?
Did you see the Max Duggan run in a losing effort?
I did.
Holy hell.
That was good, right?
What a run.
Yeah.
To stiff arm somebody and have them affected for 15 yards is impressive. Most everything else from the TCU offense.
Not so much.
Less so. I mean, he ran well. He had the long touchdown run. Jalen Reagor had a nice game. It was a sort of one-man band for Kansas State and a winning effort from Skylar Thompson. So good for K-State, as I think they have a winning record now, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do. 4-2.
Over in the Big Ten, Ohio State 52, Northwestern 3. This one was on Friday night, Dan, if we could travel back in time for a second.
Somebody got murdered.
Guess who just got
murdered?
Justin Fields, 4 touchdowns. J.K. Dobbins, Master Teague III, both have nice days on the ground. A touchdown for each of them. Northwestern held to just 199 in total offense.
Yeah, and there's no shame in struggling against Ohio State, but we're talking about not even a year since they played and looked fully competitive for 2.5, 3 quarters against Ohio State and now lose by 49. I don't know how much more we can talk about Northwestern's offense. I know that they're down to like their 14th quarterback or whatever the situation is. Ohio State's just full on excellent. And a lot of what Ohio State does, and this is a really good Northwestern defense. I make no mistake, Northwestern's nowhere near a complete team. But this is a full-on, at least good Northwestern defense that Ohio State just trounced. They just do everything correctly. They just hit their assignments on defense. They have these incredible athletes, obviously. They're one of the, you know, one or two most talented teams in college football. But they're not doing anything brilliant. They're not changing the way we think about football. They just keep doing everything right, and that's how you win games on the road against good defenses, 52-3. J.K. Dobbins is just a revelation.
Minnesota 42, Rutgers 7. Hot Rod, Rodney Smith, 111, 2 touchdowns. Tanner Morgan, a nice day for the Gophers. Tyler Johnson, a man's day out wide. Of interest here, not on the Minnesota front. We've talked a lot about Minnesota already.
Yeah.
On the Rutgers front, the two names that have emerged for the open head coaching position, Greg Schiano, he's always in the running.
Yep.
And Joe Moorhead. Sort of interesting to me.
I don't know why you would take that.
I don't know if it's an upgrade to go to Rutgers from Mississippi State, but just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I think he can wait. Even if Mississippi State continues to be a disaster this year, I think he can be a little bit choosier than that. Also of note in this game, on a total and complete human level, did you see the Casey O'Brien thing from Minnesota?
No.
4-time cancer survivor.
Whoa.
Casey O'Brien, he had osteosarcoma, a rare bone cancer. And it's, you know, come back, whatever. Gets into the game as a holder on an extra point for Minnesota, his first time on the field, and just, you know, row the damn boat. It's the coolest thing ever. Casey O'Brien gets on the field. I am always here, Ty, for your inspirational holder stories. First, Jake Olson, USC, can't see, gets on the field during a game. Now Casey O'Brien with what he's overcome. Just super cool to see.
Absolutely. Good for him. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, elsewhere in the Big Ten, Iowa wins 26-20 over Purdue. Indiana wins 34-28 over Maryland.
You have breaking news ready to go?
Breaking news!
Iowa scored multiple touchdowns with a heartbeat.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, no problem. Also, Indiana, 5-2.
Not bad. Creeping.
Could they win 7 or 8 games this year? The answer is yes. Absolutely.
I said Indiana it at the start could. Of the year. I'm always high on Indiana.
You're always high on Indiana. You're always high on Ole Miss. You're always high on TCU. Sometimes you break up. Sometimes you sneak back into their apartment in the middle of the night.
Do you remember when I thought it was Michael Penix? That was funny.
Yeah, that was something. Indiana, Penix gets hurt. Peyton Ramsey comes in, looks sharp, not necessarily as good as Penix, but looks sharp. And your guy Stevie Scott has a nice game. Indiana at 5-2. And God, does it seem like a long time ago where we had like Maryland, 8 wins? Who's to say? Northwestern, Purdue, Nebraska on the road. And then they have Penn State, Michigan.
Yeah.
If they beat Nebraska, Northwestern, and Purdue, which seem totally doable as we sit after week 8, that's 8 wins.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hell yeah, Indiana.
That'd be great.
Hoosiers.
Let's go over the ACC quick. We had, a total of 7 overtime periods take place in the ACC?
It was an extended day, yeah.
We will talk first about Georgia Tech, 28, Miami, 21 in overtime. Tech gets a win number 2 on the year, though not in conventional fashion. They needed a fake punt for a touchdown, a fumble recovery in the end zone, and a blocked field goal late in the game to give themselves enough leeway here to win this guy in OT, Daniel. Big upset.
Yeah, you got to feel good as a Miami fan to lose to a team that goes into a season with, you know, we're not expecting much kind of attitude. Some crazy refereeing in this game, you know, for as awful as certain parts of Miami looked, you know, they still have dudes on defense. And what was it, Harris, who came in offensively and had a nice day for Miami on the ground. You know, the weird fumbling out of the end zone call, I will never understand. But goes to overtime. Georgia Tech with an absolutely bonkers fake punt with a long touchdown pass tagged to it. Loved seeing that. Georgia Tech, the very rare program that can be defined as, we're definitely not as good as the Citadel. Are we better than Miami? Yes. The Citadel, we can't claim it. We can't claim it. So weird year for Georgia Tech, but very nice win for the Yellow Jackets as well.
Virginia Tech 42, North Carolina 41. This one went to six overtimes. And because of that, we got to take the bubble wrap off the new overtime rules in college
That's
football.
That's true.
So now after the fourth overtime, you have to go for two. We had dueling 2-point conversions going on here for a little while. Virginia Tech is able to outlast the Tar Heels, although a really nice game for Sam Howell. He, with a little bit of Baker Mayfield in him, 348 and 5 touchdowns in a losing effort. How much of this game did you watch?
I watched a lot of this game late. I did not watch the first three quarters or so.
Same.
Hendon Hooker gets hurt. Ryan Willis comes in briefly, and then they turn to the Quincy Patterson. I'm going to run a lot, but I'm also going to throw an absolute dime to Damon Hazleton, I believe, is who caught that when it counts. So really nice win for the Hokies, who've been sort of down and out this year in North Carolina. Every game is going to be an adventure.
Yep.
That's the North Carolina experience. I think what we have, South Carolina, Miami, Wake comes down to it. App comes down to it. Clemson comes down to it. Georgia Tech is comfortable. Virginia Tech, a 7 million overtime. So good for the Hokies for pulling through this. A much needed one for Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente.
Clemson 45, Louisville 10. The only thing here that I need to talk about with you is that screen grab you sent to me.
The double snot rocket?
Was Trevor Lawrence really attempting a double snot rocket?
At the very least, he was trying to pick both nostrils to presumably clear his passageways.
Because a double snot rocket is like the quadruple axle of snot rockets. It's very difficult to try and do that.
You know, I find myself generally having one nostril open.
Right.
That everything tends to gather in one. So maybe he was just being dramatic. I don't know. But the double snot rocket can also be a reference to his interception. Throwing into just obvious coverage. Just almost ignoring what, you know, his the play call was, what his progression should be. They get things together. And once again, for as much rightful attention as Trevor Lawrence gets, Clemson will only go as far as Travis Etienne. And he went far, and they comfortably won in the second half.
Wake Forest 22, Florida State 20. Cam Akers looked good for Florida State, but the rest of it, not so much. Again, the line couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle Wake. The passing game sort of all over the place. Pretty good defensive effort by the Noles, to be honest with you. But
sure.
Otherwise, you know, this is why Wake Forest won by two.
Yeah, Florida State, again, in the last 2, 3, 4 minutes of a game, completely looks lost. It's now becoming a very consistent thing with Florida State, where for as much as we can say this offensive line is terrible, when they have winnable moments, they look unprepared. And I don't know how that is on anybody but the coach at this point. And striking to me to watch the end of this game a few hours after watching the end of the Oregon game, where Mario Cristobal got it together, even though the first half wasn't great with timeouts, got it together in the second half. The play calling was aggressive and they won moments. And to watch Willie Taggart, it's bad TV, Ty, is what it is.
And very quickly, we had Virginia over Duke, Pitt by 7 over Syracuse, and Boston College by 21 over NC State.
Yeah, Virginia Duke was pretty ugly. A lot of turnovers and short fields. Virginia took advantage, so not really much of a game after the second quarter. And I don't know how much of Pitt-Syracuse you watched. I think it was Friday night, not Thursday night. This was a super ugly, weird, sloppy game.
Yeah.
That Pitt won, and they won their fifth, so congratulations to the Panthers getting to that 5-win mark after I said maybe their bottom is 4 wins. So they surpassed my stupid expectations, and hopefully they continue on. Syracuse, they're rough. They just are. It's a rough year after a year of their lives last year.
Let's go over to the Pac-12. We had USC 41, Arizona 14. The Trojans led 27-0 after the third quarter. Khalil Tate actually got benched in the third quarter. So not a great game for the Wildcats at all. I thought Keaton Slovis looked pretty good. Keenan Christen had a nice game on the ground. His first career game, 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards for USC. A good effort, I thought, for the USC defensive front. 7 sacks, 11 tackles for loss. So this was a good game for USC, any way you slice it.
Yes, a good game score-wise, a good game results-wise, a good game production-wise on both sides of the ball. An awful game in terms of injuries. This game was Keaton Slovis and dudes you didn't know were on the USC team, which if you're going to win beat up, good. Because I think Marquise Stepp gets hurt in this game.
His ankle,
Bavai,
yeah.
Malapai. He doesn't even suit up in this one. They're beat up at, they're actually pretty healthy at receiver, but Drake Jackson, Christian Rector on the other side. Palaye Natayote. I'm getting closer, Ty.
Sure.
He's my favorite player on this defense. Elijah Griffin. They're down so many dudes. They were suiting up walk-ons and freshmen and redshirt. Like, it was a walking wounded for USC. And to win that type of game by, if my math serves, 27 points. Hell yeah, USC, who I think remain in the driver's seat for the Pac-12 South with their tiebreak win over Utah.
I maintain that they're a pretty good team.
You're right. It's been confirmed.
I maintain. Okay. Oregon State 21, Cal 17. Both teams, a couple interesting factoids here. Both teams had identical total yardage, 282 to 282. It is the first time Oregon State has had consecutive road wins since 2013. And also, Daniel, they had 9 sacks in this game, 14 tackles for loss. Talking about Oregon State's defense is not something we spend a lot of time on. And by that, I mean any time on all season, because it's been all offense out there. Granted, this is not a high-powered Cal offense, but still, it's good to see 9 sacks.
It is. I think Oregon State's defense is still full-on bad.
They are.
Cal is the cure for the common defense without Chase Garbers, who I actually think is probably one of the best 4 or 5 quarterbacks when he's healthy and gives them actual balance, because Devon Monster is just, he's not the answer in terms of a Cal team that has, and rightfully so, high hopes because of a really good defense. So good for Oregon State. They ran the ball not crazy well, but they were able to pace this game and survive. You know, to win on the road in the gauntlet that is, I couldn't even get through it, the Pac-12, really nice for Oregon State. And I don't know what their drive for 6 looks like. They sit at 3-4. They have Arizona, who looks to be a mess right now, ASU at Wazoo, who has a mess of a defense right now. The drive for 6 looks harrowing, but you can see the path.
Evan Weaver, by the way, 21 tackles in this
game. He's so good. Oh my God.
21 tackles. Were there any tackles that did not involve Evan Weaver is the question.
It's very rare to see.
Good Lord. All right. Wazoo 41, Colorado 10. Washington State is 28-5 since the year 2015 when forcing multiple turnovers.
Yeah, Colorado's rough, especially on defense. Another team that's a cure for a common offense. The Washington State came in with a really good offense, and Wazoo gets on the board. Their first conference win of the year, October 19th. Probably didn't see that coming. So nice. I guess it qualifies as neck crack. Has to.
A good neck crack? Wazoo. You want the sound?
Please do.
Good neck
I regret
crack.
It. I regret it. I regret it.
And finally, if we could travel way back in time to Thursday.
Better do.
UCLA 34, Stanford 16, Dan. Stanford had 198 in total yardage compared to 455 from the Bruins. They ran for just 55 yards compared to 263 from the Bruins. It was a big deal. For UCLA, they snapped an 11-game losing streak to Stanford. The last time they won was back in 2008.
Yeah.
Daniel, this is a really bad look for a Stanford team that we thought might be, I don't know, coming to a little bit.
Low moment.
Yeah.
What a weird thing to say. It's like, low moment. You lost to Chip Kelly. Yeah, I was talking myself into Stanford having a really nice back half of the season with a near perfect schedule until Notre Dame, UCLA, Arizona, Colorado, Wazoo, and the Wazoo defense anyway, Cal and the Cal offense. You could see a path to a really strong turnaround from the Cardinal. Unfortunately, they're starting a third string quarterback and they are beat up all over the place and the talent just isn't there in the same way offensively. So real rough, but you know, I guess good for UCLA. Win, take advantage of bad situations, because UCLA is not finding themselves in that position all that often.
There are a couple other games I want to mention very quickly.
Yeah.
BYU 28, Boise State 25. It was the battle of the backups here. We had Chase Cord starting for Boise and Baylor Romney starting for BYU. To my knowledge, he is not related to Mitt.
I think he's a distant relative. I've looked this up because I knew you were going to go here.
How do I always screw up the relation?
So distant relative, that's not the big thing though, Ty. He's the third string. It's what, Jaren Hall is the backup to Zach Wilson. So Baylor Romney, third string. Fourth string, so third string, distant relative of Mitt Romney. Fourth string, Critchlow, I want to say his last name is.
Okay.
Married Mitt Romney's granddaughter.
Wow. So double, this is the all Romney offense.
Double Romney quarterback room. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. They missed Hank Bachmeier. I know there was a lot of confidence in Chase Cord, but he had definitely a down game. Did you want to touch on anything else, G5? Because I have very
excited. Well, I've got SMU beating Temple by 24.
SMU is good.
By 24. I also had Lehigh winning in overtime. Big game for Tyler Monaco over Fordham.
You just skipped over the rest of G5 and went up Patriot League.
And, of course, the Colgate game. We're going to do a dedicated Emerger pod for the Colgate 1-point win on the road, but that's all I have.
Houston and Dana Holgorsen lost their skull at mind, but beat UConn by a touchdown. Navy. This is the new segment, Ty, and we can go through, Navy won big over South Florida, which is not a huge surprise. Memphis won big over Tulane, which I think is kind of a surprise to me. UCF, the Gabriel to Gabriel connection, strong against ECU. Cincinnati with a nice enough win over, still a feisty Tulsa team. SMU is the story right now with their just dominant win over a good Temple team. Reggie Roberson, receiver, goes over 200 yards. Here's my sort of don't look now. We don't have a sound for it. This is my pre-dude don't look now. So we've got a Cincy SMU, they're on the road to each other right now in the championship game for the American. But Cincinnati is Temple. I think they're on the road against Memphis to finish out their year. SMU is at Memphis and at Navy. Don't look now. Navy's real good. Navy's really good, Ty, after a down year. Also, don't look now. Wake 6-1. Pitt 5-2. Indiana 5-2, we mentioned. Western Kentucky in Tyson Helton's first year.
Yeah.
Their defense is full-on really good after the Mike Sanford era.
Era.
We can very kindly call it.
Very kind, yeah.
Their defense is really good, and I think they held on to their defensive coordinator from that era. So that's good for the Hilltoppers. Louisiana Tech and UAB both 6-1 in Conference USA, and I think those two teams play at UAB. Ball State might be the only decent MAC team. After a down year last year, they have not lost a MAC game. San Diego State, very quietly, because here's who watches the San Diego State games. Like 44 people. they're 6-1, and they have no Boise or Utah State on the schedule. Oregon State, we talked about their drive to 6. But they are in a nice letdown look-ahead spot against, I want to say, Wazoo before the Apple Cup. So that's nice. App State is 6-0, even with, who's their defensive coordinator, Ty? You've probably blacked this out from your mind. It's Ted Roof.
Oh, God.
Is the App State coordinator, but they're 6-0. Georgia State 5-2. We remember their win over Tennessee, but they have a terrible 2018. Good for Sean Elliott and Georgia State. Ty, let's award some dudages.
Have we retired Evan Weaver from this segment?
Yes. Weaver is, he has his, what do we call him? Dubos, the dude bona fides.
Yeah. Okay.
Bona fides. KJ Hamler is probably going to be retired after this week. Jamichael Hasty, we spent time on. Buddy Johnson for A&M. We didn't really talk about A&M and Ole Miss. Ugly game for the A&M passing game, but win is a win is a win. Win your clunkers. So Buddy Johnson all over the place for the Aggies. Casey O'Brien from Minnesota, we'd mentioned that story. Breece Hall, DeAndre Swift had to do this whole thing himself. Quincy Patterson, Virginia Tech. Troy Dye, broke thumb, kept going. Jalen Johnson, Utah, with his, smothering of Brandon Ayuk. Reggie Roberson, SMU. Kenneth Gainwell, all over the place, all-purpose. Huge, huge day for Memphis over Tulane. Eric Mitchell, all over the place for UCF in their win. And the Surratt brothers for Wake Forest and North Carolina.
There is
Chaz
another.
All over the place on defense. And I believe it's Sage on offense for Wake. Great receiver.
Chaz and Sage.
Chaz and Sage.
Huh.
That's all.
All right. Well, thank you to everyone for calling in, for tuning in, for downloading the show. Don't forget, if you haven't already subscribed to The Verbal, you can do so. Go to Apple Podcasts or Google, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast. Anywhere you like to get your shows, you can subscribe to ours. We are The Solid Verbal. We're going to be broadcasting again on Tuesday morning. That's when the Tues Cruise is going to drop. I'm excited about the Tues Cruise this week.
What I mean, so we have a brand new, I wouldn't even say it's a game. I would say it is an environment.
Yeah.
It is a culture. It is we're going into a new ecosystem, I would say.
I'm pretty excited about this next version of the Tues Cruise. By the way, a Tues Cruise shirt now available if you go to solidverbal.com/store.
So are we just doing, are we fully living in this new ecosystem that you're bringing to the Tues Cruise on Tuesday, or is this just a segment?
I think we might be fully living in it, Dan.
Okay, great.
The last time we fully lived in one of my self-created ecosystems got a little dark.
Was this when we did the RPG or whatever we called it?
Got a little dark. Caught me after work one day. I just started writing and it went to a weird place.
Anytime we can get Ty going to a strange place, I think is a big win for the show.
This one isn't too far from the norm. I think people will appreciate it.
Okay, great.
So tune in Tuesday morning. We also do our usual weekly preview show that will be on Thursday morning around 6 a.m. Eastern.
Love it.
Daniel, you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
I'll do my best.
We're going to get this show edited and posted in short order. We will be back on Tuesday. In the meantime, for myself, for Dan, thank you so much again for downloading the show. We will be back very, very shortly. In the meantime, stay solid.
Tommy Johnny.
Peace.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.